Okay, we are back with part two of our continuing free agency wrap-up. If you haven't yet listened to part one, we talked about the Warriors, the Bogut trade with Dallas. We talked about all of Dallas's transactions, where Oklahoma City goes from here, a possible Westbrook renegotiate and extend, San Antonio signing Gasol, Washington, Rondo to the Bulls, as was called perfectly in the mock offseason. We went to all of that. If you're not doing it yet, listen on a faster speed with your podcast player to help you get through all this, and listen to some other podcasts too. Very, very efficient. We're all about efficiency here on the show. We are sponsored today by the Naked 3D Fitness Tracker, the world's first home body scanner. Find out more about that, as many Dunked On listeners have. The sales actually have been phenomenal from what they tell me, at naked.fit/capspace. And also, we are sponsored today by Betterment, lower cost automated investing. Find out more about them at betterment.com/capspace. Danny, the Sacramento Kings, they started this offseason so well, and then
they turned into a pumpkin again.
Garrett Temple, 3 years, $24 million, also a third-year player option.
Good lord.
Amazingly enough, Temple is 30. He is rated pretty much at replacement level by most metrics throughout his career. Had an okay year last year as he shot the three slightly better. Not someone who can really handle the ball as a point guard, however. I thought that maybe, you know, the Wizards should have taken advantage of their full bird rights and, you know, maybe paid him like $4 million a year for like 1 or 2 years. But this is an exorbitant price for a 30-year-old. Granted, he's a good defender, but that's about really most of what he offers. And that then resulted in them rescinding their qualifying offer to Seth Curry. And they also don't have another point guard on the roster other than Darren Collison.
It's absolutely confounding because point guard is such an important position in this league. I thought that this has kind of been resolved by Brooklyn's struggles last year, Detroit basically dying whenever Reggie Jackson was not on the floor after they traded Brandon Jennings. And the Kings spent considerable resources, many of them well, on other things, and then punted at primary ball handler. And it's not like they have, I mean, they can run some stuff through Rudy Gay. They could even run some stuff through Boogie, not really initiating action, but just like having the ball in his hands and running around him. But you need to have guys who can initiate pick and rolls, and they do not have enough. It is strange.
Yeah, we talk about how there are so many point guards in this league, but that also can throw into stark relief what it looks like when you don't have a good point guard. And they also, and it's not like they have someone else on this team other than Collison who really can be initiating things. I think they are going to be better on defense. They're going to play Temple a lot. So Matt Barnes, 2 years, $12 million, a second-year player option for him at age 36. I think a solid contract for him. This actually started at, I think, a little bit less than what his cap hold was with Memphis. And Memphis might have wanted to think about keeping him around and just paying him like 1 year, $10 million. It wouldn't have cost them anything because they had full bird rights on him. So we'll see what they end up doing to replace that. But it only would have cost them basically his $6.7 million, I want to say, million-dollar cap hold to retain him. But this is home for Barnes. He is unrestricted, so maybe you want to come home. There is some redundancy now between him and Rudy Gay and Caspi as combo forwards. That doesn't really matter that much because combo forwards are versatile. That's why they call him that. And, you know, Barnes could fall off a cliff at any time, but I think he's someone who will help them. He can still defend a reasonable amount and not a terrible contract here, other than that you consider, hey, they probably could have used a point guard, but that's really more Temple's opportunity cost than Barnes. This could also set things up for a Rudy Gay trade, but as you've noted, there's not really a great fit if they want to trade Gay for a point guard at this point.
Yeah, there just aren't that many teams with that, what's called in economics, the double coincidence of wants, where you want what they have and they want what you have. Also, something to note with Matt Barnes is that I'm guessing he had a good relationship with Memphis head coach Dave Yeager because he is following him to Sacramento.
Ah, excellent point there. They, of course, rescinded the qualifying offer to Seth Curry. As we noted, they would have had to use cap space to match an offer, but considering what he ended up getting from Dallas, I have no idea why they wouldn't just offer him that same contract or maybe even slightly more and out of their cap space. Just really, like, they couldn't have gotten Garrett Temple for 3 years and 18 million, or 3 years and 18 million instead of 3 for 24. Like, I mean, I really, I'm just surprised that they did not bring back Curry. And maybe I'm overrating Curry. It could just be the halo effect of his name, but I thought he played really well offensively. Yeah, he's bad at defense, but still someone who I thought especially like has some upside as a player, and that's something that you don't see normally at that level. They also are probably going to waive Duje Dukan, who was a stretch four out of Wisconsin. I had $200,000 guaranteed this year. They might stretch that as well to open up more space. And then I think they probably are going to have to stretch the $1.5 million guaranteed for Caron Butler, which is a player option that he opted into, depending on what the starting salaries are for guys like Aflalo, Barnes, Temple, whether they have like their maximum raises or because they have options that those guys might actually start higher because they want to get more of their salary early on. We'll see.
One small note. I think Dukan is before his $200,000 guarantee date. I think that's August 1st. But either way, you know, it's a small amount with that. And what either way, what Seattle or Sacramento has left is the room mid-level exception pretty much. And they also don't have a ton of roster spots left because of all the picks that they got, Malachi Richardson, Papianis, and
Scal.
How did I forget Scal, my guy?
Well, a lot of other teams forgot about him too. He lasted until 28, so you can't be blamed.
Womp womp. But
and you're right about Dukan, by the way. Yeah, he's not guaranteed until August 1st, so he won't count anything to move on from him. And Butler, they're going to have to waive him anyway to get the roster spot, so they might as well just stretch him. So I think that's almost certainly going to happen.
Yeah, I'm one of those people who just supports if you can put the guy and eat the money on their books that year to just do it. I think that we'll see how that affects a couple of different things, but that's just my personal preference.
Yeah. And Sacramento now, they are just about done for this year. For next year, they are looking at, if they were to move on from Aflalo and Tolliver with their slight non-guarantees in the next year, they could still get up to about $50 million, even if Barnes were to opt in.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, now they'd be losing Gay, they'd be losing Caspi, so they would definitely have guys that needed replacing. I think maybe the Barnes deal, too, again, is kind of more, they'll be losing Collison, too, so they're going to have a ton of needs with that $50 million, and it's not going to go that far, but in 2017. But and that's also without McLemore's hold as well. We'll see how he plays, whether he actually would come back. His hold is pretty significant. So a lot of variability for the Kings, but they have excellent flexibility for next summer as well, and we'll see how well they play. The Nets, sole transaction since we last checked in on them, Tyler Johnson, a four-year, $50 million offer sheet for it's an Arenas offer sheet, obviously. He is a tiny cap hold right now, like $1.2 million with Miami. The offer sheet hasn't obviously been signed yet, but this is more than Miami can pay him unless they are matching this offer sheet. So the question is now, I mean, I think 4 for $50, if you see Johnson as kind of a backup combo guard who can back up two positions, I mean, I think, you know, I'm much more happy about paying $12 million a year for a backup if he can back up two positions than one. And, you know, Johnson, it wouldn't shock me if he could play effectively 25 minutes a game. And so that's a reasonable offer for him, especially given the fact that he's 24 and could improve. The question now becomes, will the Heat match or not?
And that's a really complicated decision because it would be, I believe it's around 15 and then around $16 million for the final 2 years. And Miami is a team that values financial flexibility. And while they have a lot of uncertainty for those years, especially that third one at present, Bosch and Goran Dragic are under contract and Dwayne Wade is trying his damnedest to be under contract for that year. So that would make it very hard for them to get better because if they match, the actual salaries go in. So that does affect their books. I matched it in the mock-off season. This was the exact offer sheet that was signed. But I really like Tyler Johnson. I am a believer in his. This is one of, there's this weird confluence of things, I'll bring this up, that of guys between the Sixers and the Nets that I think should have switched offers. Like, I think that Tyler Johnson makes a lot more sense next to Ben Simmons than he does with what Brooklyn is building. But I really like him as a guy who can be, who's off ball on offense, but can defend both positions. I think that's a really versatile thing, considering you should be trying to get point guards and primary ball handlers anyway.
Yeah, I agree that he would have been a nice fit in Philly, and so did Kevin Pelton when he made that offer in the mock-off season. They now have $23.5 million in space. We're going to assume that Justin Hamilton is going to be the room exception, so they still need more at power forward, and they, again, could maybe look to the European market as well, though power forward is kind of a harder position to fill from there. Guys who they might want to take a flyer on who are power forwards. You could see maybe like Mo Spates, probably more of a center, is someone that maybe they could look at. Jordan Hill seems like an utterly Netsy player.
Yeah, he does.
Maybe they could bring back Thomas Robinson as well. You know, I'm trying to think of kind of younger guys for them, but there's not a ton out there as far as still young, athletic power forwards. Maybe James McAdoo would be someone that they could look at. I thought Christian Wood actually looked awesome on the Sixers Summer League team yesterday. He definitely has a reputation as kind of an odd guy, a little bit of a spacey guy, but he also has a 9'3 standing reach and can shoot threes and could jump pretty high too. And actually, based on his D-League translations, was very good last year. And is only age 20. So I think he'd be a perfect guy for the Nets to take a flyer on, especially because the Sixers will probably be looking at a little bit more of a roster crunch. And he's actually not on their roster right now. He's just a free agent. So I think for a team, you know, that has the roster spots, I mean, because a lot of these teams that have space and are young, like the Suns, Utah, the Nuggets, those guys, teams don't have the roster space. The Nets are in the position of being able to rebuild and having the space. So guys like that would be who I would be focusing on. Let's move on to Miami now. We also didn't talk about the fact that Bosch could have a medical retirement, and that could change things a little bit for them as far as what their cap hits are going to be much later on. You mentioned sort of what their luxury tax situation is going to be. The Wade situation, the Heat have upped their offer to 2 for $40, which I think that with a player option on the second year, I think they can barely get in there. According to Dan Levitard, he wants a third year, or according to Brian Windhorst, he wants 2 years, $25 million. The Heat could get there if they were able to dump Josh McRoberts for nothing. And this really, again, we heard this last year, but it's happening again this year. I think Wade, he was not involved in the slightest in the Kevin Durant recruiting. I think he's miffed that Hassan Whiteside was considered the first free agent target, although given the situation, that was very rational for Miami to treat it that way. And so now there is not that level of trust that we, you know, maybe thought that there might be, where he would take less and then hope for, with his bird rights, a huge balloon payment at the end. That was something that we talked about for a while, but apparently that trust is not there, and Wade wants to get paid, and he is talking to the Nuggets and Bulls in theory. But if they give him 3 years, $60 million, that would be a horrendous contract for either franchise, and probably for Miami too, but because he is sort of Mr. Heat, it makes more sense for them.
And, of course, it's getting talk radio buzzing that he is also talking to Cleveland, and there are some possibilities there. If you don't already follow Albert Nahmad, follow Albert Nahmad. He has explained this better than it would take us way too long to explain the complications of that, but it is technically possible.
Yeah, I don't know where the Bulls would get the space for this offer. Maybe if they move on from Gibson, they could get up there. Wade and Rondo together would be a complete disaster from a spacing standpoint, from a ball domination standpoint, especially because they also have
Jimmy
Butler on
the team. They could do it as a sign-in trade, maybe, but why would Miami do that?
Yeah, maybe that's the case. They would probably do it just to get back someone like Taj Gibson. That might be it then.
Yeah, because they would have to do that before they signed Whiteside, but they could sequence these to make it work, I believe.
Yeah, no, I don't see any reason why they couldn't, but I'm kind of just thinking about it off the top of my head. But Miami still with $19 million and the room mid-level, but not a ton of variability there. If they were to just not match on Tyler Johnson and to dump Briante Weber, who I think is $200,000 guaranteed, they could increase that by maybe like $1 million or so. And then obviously we're talking about moving on from McRoberts as a possibility too. But they kind of need McRoberts actually at this point, because they are very low on backup big man, especially if Chris Bosh is unable to continue his career. And remember, he can't come off from medical retirement until a year after he last played, which would be February of 2017. Let's get to the Clippers. Jamal Crawford, as we predicted, all that noise about him leaving was a leverage play. He succeeded, and now he has a 3-year, $42 million contract in which the final year is partially guaranteed. I haven't seen the actual number on what that is yet. Have you, the last year guarantee?
I have not, and it is awesome in some ways that he's another guy who's in his 30s who is signing the biggest contract of his career. It's paralleling Matt Barnes, and both former Warriors, incidentally. I just think of that because I live here, not because I'm some sort of whatever. But Jamal Crawford, value player. I always thought that the number once Austin signed had to be higher than what Austin Rivers got. But
yeah, that, and the reporting was, in fact, that they were not too happy about that.
Yeah, Sam Amick had the reporting that they originally offered him, I think it was like 112, like right around the same time Austin Rivers signed, and he was not pleased with that. But eventually they got together as felt like it was inevitable. And this puts the Clippers, this kind of solidifies what they were going to do, especially in concert with re-signing Luke Richard and Ba Mute for the biannual exception, that they are a hard cap team.
Yeah, that's right, because Wes Johnson signed for the MLE, and then they had to use bird rights on Crawford. If he had left, then maybe they would have used cap space on Wes Johnson. And Crawford is 36. I don't think this was quite the biggest contract of his career, although it's the highest per year salary. I think he got a $50 million deal when he got traded to the Knicks.
I think it's per year, not total.
I mean, it's pretty amazing to see guys like him and Barnes getting like some of the biggest contracts. And these are guys who have been around for 10 years, too. You know, it's not like who have been good rotation players for that amount of time. I have them now at about $6 million short of the tax. They could obviously stretch Paul Pierce, or he could even retire as well. That would open up another between 2.5 and 3.5 million. And then, as you noted, the apron is 117.3 million, and they are about $10 million short of that now. So they should be okay. I assume that Crawford also got paid flat. Maybe that's probably not the right assumption, because they have these potential hard cap issues. But even to make trades and stuff, that $10 million, sign some more minimum guys, they're already at 12 players anyway. They could move on from Brandon Dawson, who's not guaranteed until the league-wide cutdown date of January 10th. So they could knock that off, get another roster spot. They also have Bryce Johnson coming in. I mean, their biggest problem now is they have nothing even remotely established as a backup center. But I think that when you consider some of the offensive firepower on this team, you saw what Cole Aldrich was able to do in rehabilitating his career as the backup center on their second unit last year. If I were a guy along who's going to get maybe, you know, $2 or $3 million a year elsewhere and is still relatively young, I might go to the Clippers for the minimum just to see if I can really increase my value. You know, someone like a Kevin Serafin, I think, would be a very nice fit there as a potential backup center at the minimum. Jordan Hill probably will do a little bit better than that. This would be another nice Deadman fit as well. Quincy Acey, I think, could be an excellent fit as like a very undersized backup center for them, but someone who can sort of play as like a Mavs backup center type, play pick and roll, get up for some alley-oops. He's only 25. Jason Thompson could be another guy I might look at too. So I think they have some pretty decent options, but they do need somebody else right now as a backup center, because I don't think Bryce Johnson is who you want to be counting on for this team that has an excellent chance now of being the 3 seed. You'd put them as the overwhelming favorite for that behind the Spurs at 2 and the Warriors at 1.
They have so much talent. And I will also mention, for those of you who are interested in the machinations of the hard cap, it's something I've written about a lot. It is in the CBA Encyclopedia at Real GM, and also on Mid-Level Exceptional, I called it Advanced Hard Caponomics about when the Warriors had it because of the unlikely bonus situation. And I've been asking people to see if I can find that out, because those count against the hard cap. But if you want to, we might talk about the nitty gritty, but if you want to read it, the material's already out there.
Atlanta, absolute steal. Fantastic deal. Might even be the best, if not the best, one of the best. Malcolm Delaney, who is out of Virginia Tech, spent the last few years in the EuroLeague. I believe he was with Kuban in Russia last year. Had a great year. Backup point guard, shoots it well on threes. They really needed help at backup point guard. He's a veteran. Granted, I thought it was going to be the room exception for him. I mean, he was really maybe the best point guard in Europe last year. And instead, it is a pure minimum starting at $543,000. It is guaranteed for 2 years, but it doesn't even cost them any cap space because he's starting at the rookie minimum. Just a fantastic value. I mean, you never know for sure whether guys who are coming over are going to do well, but most of the guys who have played well in the EuroLeague can at least be a backup, at least an NBA player. I mean, for any NBA player, getting them at that low of a price is a steal. Great, great job by the Hawks.
Yeah, and the type of thing that you need to do when you're building up your depth at basically at any stage in the team building process. And yeah, I don't know him as well, Virginia Tech product, but from what I've heard, yeah, and what you can see in his statistical translations, it looks like he'll be a great fit.
They still have $3.8 million left, and you know that could get them. What do they need still? They are looking for probably another option at backup big man. I mean, they are going to hold on to Scott. They are at 15 players with Delaney, but I think they are going to just probably move on from Lamar Patterson, who's non-guaranteed. They probably actually want to get a third point guard. I would say that's probably their biggest thing that they need. And then Splitter, we don't know what his health situation is right now, so another backup big man. He's reported to be Splitter progressing ahead of schedule, but you know, I wouldn't put a ton of stock in that until we actually see him back on the court. But good job here by the Hawks. They do some of the little stuff like that better than a lot of teams do. Minnesota with, I think, a great value contract, even if the fit is a little bit dicey, in Cole Aldrich, 3 years, $22 million.
Yeah, it's a really great contract, and it fits a couple of different boxes for Minnesota. One, Cole Aldrich is a good player. You know, we can't discount that. He's a peer five, but he can man the spot for 10, 15, maybe even 20 minutes, which is something they need to have. But the other massive reason that it's a good thing, especially considering he probably took a hometown discount as a Minnesota product, is that it is Gorgui Dieng insurance. It could even be more than insurance if they decide to trade him, but Dieng is a guy who could get very expensive. And so to have somebody to basically say, okay, you know, if you get too pricey, we already have your replacement, is not only good in terms of extension negotiations, but is also it's a good place to be so that you don't make a mistake.
They could also try to move on from Dieng this year as well, and then have the insurance. I don't like that in the short term. This looks like Karl Towns be spending a lot of time at the four, which I don't like him as much on either end. But you know, I think this is where the value was in the market, and I think again, a lot of teams that could have used a rim protecting center really missed the boat on this one. And I would probably rather have him at age 27 than Mozgov. And Mozgov got, you know, three times the amount that Cole Aldrich did over more years too. So I think that teams like Portland, the Bulls, Brooklyn, those type of teams that could have used some sort of rim protection at center should be kicking themselves about missing out on him. This is a very cheap price for him as far as I'm concerned. And the Wolves now looking at how much left?
About $22.4 million is the number I'm using. And a small point I want to make with this, and I brought this up a little bit earlier, this is a far better example of it. They stretched Kevin Martin instead of just putting on his thing, instead of putting it on what would have been on the last year and then this year.
Yeah, putting all of his, I think like $4 million or so that he got bought out for, they stretched him instead of just using it all up this year. And I agree with you. Yeah, like what else are they doing now with this $22 million that you shouldn't have just left him on for this year? That's where you're going on that?
Yeah, I think it was it's not a devastating mistake, but it's a big mistake in terms of easily correctable. What do you like? So I was thinking about this of what they really need. And a lot of it also depends on what you see Andrew Wiggins as, because I thought a thing that would be great for them in the long term would be to get a, you know, a defense first wing like Lance Thomas before he signed or somebody like that. But I don't think that that Thibodeau is going to want to do that until they know what they have in Wiggins.
Yeah, in his system, seeing whether he can be a great defensive player. I mean, my hope for them was that they were going to get a combo forward who could play at the four and then roll with Towns at the five. Maybe Wiggins even could play some four for them. Maybe Tibbs can rehabilitate Shabazz Muhammad a little bit. They have some potential options there, but I wouldn't have minded them going there. But I'm okay with these guys keeping the powder dry, trying to get better under Tibbs this year, see if you can make the playoffs, and then see if you can be like a real free agent destination for 2017, 2018, before those extensions for Wiggs and for Towns kick in. The Lakers, a nice deal, I think, for Tarik Black, 2 years, $2.85 million.
That's 12.85.
Sorry, thank you. Yes, 12.85. I misspoke there. That is the early bird exception, but non-guaranteed the second year, and so there's no opportunity cost. His hold was basically pretty close to the minimum with his qualifying offer, so it doesn't really affect their space at all. They have $19.9 million remaining. That includes the qualifying offer for Marcelo Huertas as well, and they're still going to be pretty bad, but also now they might be wise to just leave their space open more because Russell Westbrook could potentially be available in trade, and maybe that just facilitates that if Oklahoma City isn't going to want to take back as much salary. And then Nick Young, Mike Brezan saying he's not expected to be on the team this year. probably means that he is going to get waived and stretched, or maybe there are some of these other teams that have so much space that you could give up like a second rounder or something to take him on, but I still think that's probably too little and a first rounder is too much to dump him, so probably looking at a waive and stretch for Nick Young, or maybe just a straight up waive if they don't want to encumber space. Young has 2 years left still at over $5 million in what I've always talked about as one of the worst contracts in NBA history, giving him four guaranteed years when he was 29 and was replacement level basically his whole career.
I will posit that it would be a possibility in a theoretical Russell Westbrook trade that they swap Nick Young and Kyle Singler, which would be amazing on a couple of different levels.
Yeah, that actually would make a little bit of sense. Singler has one more guaranteed year, I think, than Young does. So Charlotte continues to recover quite well also. They did lose Courtney Lee, but I think they feel okay with their options at the two. Again, I didn't like the Bellinelli, but I think everything else they've done has been really good, getting Batum and Williams for less probably than they could have gotten elsewhere, at least on a per-year basis. And then 2 years, $12.5 million for Ramon Sessions to be their backup point guard. I think that he is a decent option there. Probably not, you know, he's more of a 15-minute game backup point guard. He's not going to be as good as Lin was, obviously. And I think losing Lin and Lee is going to be difficult for them, but Lin was always going to be gone, and Lee, you know, they would have had to pay a lot for him. And then Roy Hibbert gets some legitimate rim protection on this team. I think that Hibbert at 29 started off last season looking pretty mobile and then kind of wore down as the season went on and as, you know, the Lakers continued to get their butts kicked. But I still think, you know, he is only 2 years removed from being a very good player and in the right spots can be a really good on defense. It's just he's so bad offensively with his inability to basically do anything useful on offense, whether it's finish at the rim, post up, or shoot a jumper. So, but for 1 year, $5 million, that's excellent, and he could be a part of this team, again, being just completely unstoppable defensively.
Yeah, it's a great flyer for 1 year, $5 million, and you know it's not a really a long-term risk, so I'm cool with it. You know, if they'd given him a second year, I wouldn't feel that way, but they didn't.
They are basically at the cap now, although they have not yet used their room exception. They may be forced to move on from Aaron Harrison, who is non-guaranteed. And then Troy Daniels, they still have his restricted rights with his qualifying offer, which is, again, pretty small. They may elect to move on from him as well, see if he gets any offers or anything either, as kind of the new, a poor man's Anthony Morrow, I guess. Philly, Sergio Rodriguez, 1 year, $8 million at age 30. You wrote in the notes here, which I thought was a great point, that this is the type of deal that Sam Hinkie could have saved his job with.
Rodriguez would have last, if they had signed him a year ago now, he would have been good enough to make them competitive, but not so good that they would have had real risk of losing, you know, like getting their draft pick significantly worse. They would have been more fun to watch. I think that's the biggest mistake in his process was not getting a competent point guard. And Sergio would have been fun. I like him as a fit. I don't exactly know what his role is going to be this year for the Sixers, though he'll probably start. But also, this illuminates how ill-confounded the Jared Bayless signing was.
Yeah, I didn't care for that. Obviously, we talked about why we didn't. But yeah, Rodriguez, for those who aren't familiar with him, he last played in the NBA, I think, 6 years ago. Been a Spanish national team stalwart, EuroLeague MVP a couple of years ago. He's dropped off slightly at age 30, and certainly his defense is going to be an issue. But offensively, he can run a great pick and roll, shoots the three well enough now. That's something that he didn't really do back in his previous NBA stint years ago with the Blazers. And I think that he will just make this team relatively competent on offense. He could help out Nerlens Noel as well on the pick and roll, someone who can find people, and he can play off the ball with Simmons as well, and because he can actually shoot it, which, you know, someone like Ish Smith or some of the other point guards who they had last year, or some of the other point guards on the market maybe can't do as well. So he does fit slightly better. And then another absolute steal for the Sixers, and so many teams who are good teams, I can't believe, wouldn't have offered him this. Gerald Henderson, 2 years, $18 million at age 28, who I thought was a really good backup wing, has a lot of unexplored potential as a backup 4-2 with his strength. Started to add a three-pointer a little bit more last year with Portland. If he plays the 4-2, his shooting is it goes from probably a negative to a positive. I think this is just fantastic. They can absolutely trade him away too. I just, so many teams, I have no idea why they would not have made him an offer.
One of them also potentially considering who they spent their money on being his former team.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we'll see what Portland comes up with here. And at this point, we could just talk about Portland a little bit. They haven't signed anyone yet. They're in the Gasol sweepstakes. Supposedly, we're going to offer him almost $20 million a year. They would have had to dump, I think, at least two of their restricted free agents to get there. Right now, in terms of space, Portland is at only $3 million or so, but that includes Crabbe's $2.7 million cap hold, Harkless and Leonard, who are both about $7 million cap holds. So if they want to lose those restricted rights, they could definitely sign somebody else. And Henderson, they probably had to just basically give up on him for Evan Turner. I think he's actually a better fit there than Evan Turner, frankly, with his defense, ability to play small, switch more than Turner. So that is definitely a disappointment for me for Portland. And we'll see where they go. There's been some talk of like a crazy Crabbe offer sheet of like 4 years, $70 million. And Leonard now, whether he's going to come back, Harkless, I'm surprised he hasn't gotten a restricted offer sheet yet. I think a lot of teams are just waiting to get the element of surprise on these on the 7th. So we'll have to look for that there.
The New York Knickerbockers have actually had an incredibly active July 5th, and they were active before that. And I think the best place to start is a little nuance that it could be important. Well, it will be important, we just don't know exactly how, and that is that they withdrew the qualifying offer for Langston Galloway. And what that does is it actually opens up cap space for them, because he is now not at his qualifying offer. He is at the minimum salary, because that's what he made last year. But
yeah, because if you're not, the way it works is that your cap hold is the higher of your qualifying offer or what your normal cap hold would be if you're a restricted free agent. And so if they pull the qualifying offer, then he goes down to his cap hold. If you made the minimum last year, then your cap hold is also the minimum. So that's how he gets that. So they can still re-sign him. But you know, I don't know. It seems like they're not really that interested in doing that. I mean, but they could do the same thing that they did for him with Lance Thomas. And I thought they did well to get him.
Yeah. So Lance Thomas, he got the early bird exception basically for him is 4 years, $27 million. I love this signing for them because it adds a dimension to their front court rotation that they didn't really have. I think he fits well with Melo. We don't know how much of his shooting progression is real, but his defense is very good, and they got him for 4 years. So when I've used the phrase a lot this summer of years, not dollars. And years, not dollars is more about bad contracts than good contracts when it's in a negative way. When a guy gets good dollars, more years is okay.
I'm surprised that there wasn't a bigger offer out there than this for him. I mean, this is, again, the most they could offer him. He is 27. I expect that it's possible, especially if his shooting is not as good as it was last year, which is entirely possible. This is the first year that he had shown any acumen whatsoever shooting threes. He also had a knee problem down the end of the year. It's possible that he could just not even be a rotation player by the end of this contract as he gets to be 30. But for the Knicks, you're basically getting $4 million extra bucks of cap room because his cap hold was so much smaller, only $2.1 million than his $6.2 million starting salary. So it's well worth it there. Getting his combo forward skills as a potential stretch four, you could play with Porzingis. You can play with Melo as well. Switch on the perimeter. They needed someone who could defend on the wing. I mean, he'll probably be, in theory, their best wing defender, which is, he's okay. He's not amazing at that, but he's solid. He's not going to screw up. He'll try hard. So yeah, I thought that was good. And then Brandon Jennings is an excellent value. 1 year, $5 million. They desperately needed a good backup point guard behind Derrick Rose, who shouldn't be playing that many minutes and is injury prone nonetheless. Anyway, I think Jennings, you know, he obviously is coming back from the Achilles, wasn't going to be as good. Most guys are rarely the same, but still was a quality backup point guard last year when he focused more on passing than creating his own offense. And you imagine he'll at least be a little bit better than last year as he gets further removed from that injury.
And they also, so you have those moves, and then they also today brought this per Woj, they're bringing over Willy Hernan Gomez, a very talented guy. He's Spanish originally, right?
Yeah, I think I've said this before. That he is sort of like a poor man's Enes Kanter, kind of groundbound, big, good on the offensive glass, can post up. Willie actually kind of tries harder. He'll probably be little bit better on defense than Ennis, but he'll likely be a liability. He's not going to protect the rim at all, but he's a smart player. He'll execute. Brother, of course, of Juan Hernan Gomez, who was drafted by the Nuggets this year. They probably had to pay him more than the minimum to bring him over. He was the number 35 pick last year, and so that would require carving out a little bit of space, which also maybe explains why they renounced Galloway's hold. And then another deal they made, again, going the overseas route, Mindaugas Kuzminskas, who I actually didn't know much about, but he popped off to me at the 2015 European Championships playing for Lithuania. He's kind of an energy, stretch four type, athletic, at least by European standards, and he has a really poor defensive rebounding rate, but he'll get on the offensive glass, and had a 59% true shooting, very high usage rate as well. He took a bunch of threes, shot 34% on those, which for the shorter European line, you don't know how well that will necessarily translate. But with the volume that he had, I think there's a decent chance that he could at least be someone who could give you some energy off the bench in about 10 minutes a game. And I think the Knicks have done an admirable job considering that they used up the majority of their space on Lee and Noah, at least now getting some backups. Hopefully Noah won't have to play that many minutes between O'Quinn, Porzingis at center, and then they have enough now kind of combo four guys who can play at the four that Porzingis can move to center more.
And Nate, we get to do a special Dunked On Nate live reaction to a piece of news. You ready for it?
Oh, I cannot wait.
David West, minimum Golden State Warriors.
Oh, baby. You know, we speculated that he might be their room exception guy, and I think maybe he felt a little disrespected by the Spurs because they kind of had space and they went with Pau Gasol. I actually think that David West, no, I don't know if I want to go that far as saying he's better than Pau Gasol, but in some ways he's a little bit better of a fit. So yeah, that's, I mean, I don't know how much West is going to play for them. Hopefully they will actually get him to shoot a three. That'd be nice because he can actually make those shots.
I think they'll play him with Draymond at the four and five, and that would just be fascinating.
Oh, God, that team is just going to be an absolute... I mean, West struggled in the playoffs, to be sure, but as a regular season guy, to help keep everyone's minutes down, I mean, he was great in the regular season. I mean, we talked about him a little bit, even as potential six-man consideration. I can't believe that's happened. I mean, yeah, I can believe it, but like, kudos to David West as just someone... So many guys talk about caring about winning, and he made his money in his career, and this man just wants to win. Like, you just cannot, and he's a guy who's talked about, too, as someone who is going to be, you know, a potential front office candidate for a lot of teams. Like, that man just puts his money where his mouth is, absolutely.
I will now posit something that I was going to hold off for a while. I was talking with Ethan about this last night, that my theory with the Warriors is that when they're facing lower-end competition, they should deactivate some of their older veteran guys and just have their young guys ready just to give them some playing time. Like, I honestly think at what the level that they're going to be, they might as well just do that.
Well, another guy actually who we thought could be a potential option for the Warriors, but now, I mean, I think they're fine just rolling with West at backup center a lot of the time. Orlando, they were at the cap, basically. They opened up maybe a little bit more room, or maybe even they just made room for all of their transactions. We'll have to see exactly how the math plays out. But they are trading Shabazz Napier to Portland for cash considerations per Josh Robbins, the Magic beat reporter for the Sentinel. You recall that they acquired Shabazz Napier for cash considerations from Miami a year ago as they were trying to avoid the tax. And maybe for Portland, a low-risk guy, Napier, not someone who can do anything in the lane, but maybe he'll get to be a little bit better of a shooter. He's a decent passer, and a low-cost flyer for Portland is kind of, you know, taking on the Tim Frazier role, Brian Roberts role from last year as a third point guard who probably won't play that much, but when you don't want to play Dame and CJ all of the point guard minutes, he can fill in reasonably adequately for like 7 minutes a game or something. So getting that guy basically for free in terms of assets, he's making like $1 million a year. You know, and this is at least one of the ones where I think we're all convinced that Napier wasn't any kind of great shakes that was going to help Orlando. So this does not fall into the category of them kind of letting a young asset go for nothing. Dedmon maybe kind of does. He's just an unrestricted free agent right now. But he was sort of uniquely valuable for the Magic on their team last year, just because they had no one else who could protect the rim at center. And Orlando still could do the same thing the Knicks could with Galloway. If they keep his minimum hold on of $980K, they could still bring him back because they amazingly have full bird rights on Dedmon. They could still bring him back, pay him basically whatever they want to, as long as they keep that $980K minimum hold on the books. So we just went through a ton of contracts And all of these guys who have all this money should consider Betterment. It's never too late to save for retirement or other financial goals. And the financial services industry has embraced the technology with the entry of automated investing. And Betterment is the largest automated investor out there. It's lower cost than more traditional financial services. They have tools such as the tax impact preview that shows you what the tax impact of one of your transactions is going to be. They have smart deposit, where if your checking account amount goes over whatever your preset limit is, they will take your extra cash and automatically invest it for you. You can find out more about Betterment at betterment.com/capspace. That's the URL. We talk about capspace all the time on the program, obviously easy to remember it. betterment.com/capspace. Dunked On listeners can get up to 6 months of no fees at that betterment.com/capspace URL. Make sure you enter that so they know that you came from us. betterment.com/capspace, investing made better. All right, let's do a little bit of a rundown of where everyone is now. Boston still basically has that $15 million or so that we thought they could open up, but they're willing to move on from Young and Hunter. $12 million without that, and they still, of course, have the qualifying offers out there for Sullinger and Tyler Zeller. The Cavaliers haven't done anything. Still, they have J.R. Smith, who they can pay with bird rights. Still no rumors at all on Smith, and then they also have that taxpayer mid-level. They have the trade exception for Varejao, which is 9.6, and they also have the Mike Miller trade exception, which is a little bit under $3 million. The Nuggets are at $25.8 million. They have plenty to give Dwayne Wade everything that he wants, but that seems like pretty much a leverage play, but they don't really have anything else that they need right now. So I think if I were them, I might take a couple more low-cost flyers. They also have a roster crunch, so there's nobody really left on the market, I think, even worth paying, you know, 1 year, $20 million for. I might have looked actually at Henderson if I were them and just thrown, like, and then if you trade Fried, you would have had him. But nonetheless, what else do we have?
The Detroit Pistons have $10.5 million left. I think they still have a couple needs. I describe it more as the lottery ticket type guys, but another swingman would be a big help.
Yeah, although remember, we talked about this before, that because Drummond is getting so much of a raise, that they will be getting close to the tax. So I don't expect them to spend all of that $10.5 million, maybe, you know, kind of some lower cost flyer type of guys. The Rockets also right around $10 million. That includes Beasley. It includes Donatas Matiunas, another restricted free agent, and his cap hold is 5.7, so they could get up to 16 if they were to not match on him. And they probably need another backup big, another point guard. The Pacers also about $10 million, and they are in desperate need of a backup power forward, maybe a point guard. The Grizz, we talked about, $7 million. They are presumably using the room MLE on James Ennis, and that $7 million is assuming they waive Vince Carter. Maybe they felt like they just wanted to keep Vince Carter instead of Matt Barnes. I don't know why that would have been the case, though. And then the Bucks, $6.3 million with Plumlee's cap hold. That can get up to a little over 10 if they were to renounce him, but he is a restricted free agent. As we know, the Cavs officially, not officially, but again, it's been reported that they won't match on Delly. Who else did we not talk about?
So New Orleans, I have it that they have about $3.5 million left, and that includes the hold for Frazier, but remember that they have to go into cap space to do it, and that also includes the partially guaranteed contract for Babbitt at its full amount. So I have it that they have about $4.6 million to match on Frazier if they're going to keep Babbitt. They could use another wing, they could use point guard, but theoretically Frazier could be that guy as well.
Yeah, he's a restricted free agent. I don't know that the point guard market now seems to have kind of cooled off a little bit. I thought, especially Jennings, I can't believe how cheap that was. Maybe he just really wanted to play in New York and he knew he was going to get a lot of playing time with the Rose situation. Didn't talk about the Suns. They haven't done anything since we last discussed them. $22.2 million remaining. Portland, we talked about as well. And then the Raptors are just looking at the MLE and the BAE. Most likely they could also maybe use early bird rights on James Johnson to bring him back, although he really kind of fell out of shape this year. He's 29. I don't know that there's really a ton of reason to keep him. He was not really particularly effective against LeBron, and that's the only reason to keep him on there anyway. And then the Jazz are looking at about 17.7 now that they traded away Trey Burke for nothing, and I think that is everyone.
Can I go on my baby rant now?
Oh, please. Yeah.
Okay, so I was very critical of Utah selling so low on Trey Burke, and I got a pretty heavy pushback from Utah people about a couple of different things which I thought were a great example of these kind of narrative fallacies. And so one was the idea of, oh, they were negotiating a buyout and this is better than that. Utah was only, if they were negotiating a buyout, that was a constraint they put on themselves. There was no reason that they needed to do that. They have his contract. He signed that contract and they can use it. And waiting didn't have any opportunity cost for them. They're not using this cap space right now. They could have traded him. You know, it's not like they're signing Derek Favors to a renegotiation extension right now. And the fact of the matter with this, with Vucevic, with a lot of these guys that have been marginalized by what happened around them, is that in September, October, maybe even November, there are going to be injuries around the league. And if you have an asset, you can't give it away for nothing. You owe it to yourselves to do more than that. And it's ridiculous to sell low just for clarification when you don't have to hit the roster limit or any other constraint.
Yeah, I mean, that 2021 second round pick is really pretty ugly. I mean, heck, you could even send Trey Burke to the D League and let him like kick some butt there or something to try and rehab his value if he wanted. I mean, like, that's so low that it's almost like, just why bother? I mean, I guess you're saving $3 million if they don't actually get up to the cap, but, and maybe they're worried they couldn't dump him somewhere else for just a second rounder, but I mean, that seems very, it does seem unrealistic. All right, give me some best contracts.
Brandon Jennings, 1.5. It's not a long-term thing, but it's a really good contract. Seth Curry, 2.6. And we've seen, like, this point guard market, I think, ended up doing something that I think you and I expected that apparently a lot of GMs didn't, which was that once the main guys went, you were able to get some bargains. So it was so surprising to see players like DJ Augustine go thinking it was at a premium.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jennings is better than Augustine last year, probably. And for the Magic to, I mean, they actually had full bird on Jennings too, although he would have cost $12 million until he signed, but they could have just signed him. Yeah, I mean, I guess he would have then counted at like $8 million. So maybe, I mean, presumably they would have had to pay more to keep him than New York. But you know, 1 year, $8 million for him, or even like 2 years, $12 million with a second year player option, so much better than what they did for Augustin. So that was a little not good for the Magic. I thought that was a great deal. I think Rodriguez is a solid deal at 1 for 8. Malcolm Delaney is fantastic, I think.
Gerald Henderson.
You know, and again, yeah, Gerald Henderson. And again, some of these guys who are coming in from the EuroLeague, you could say, yeah, you know, they're not proven in the NBA, and but at the price that they're getting, it's a great flyer. They have a lot more, like, because when you bring these guys in from the EuroLeague, you say, yeah, it's a risk, they're not proven, but there's also a chance that they could actually be better than you think, right? Like, some of these guys, like Augustin, Ish Smith, even, like, we've seen enough of them to kind of know what they are in the NBA. At least these guys have some upside, and they're generally coming cheaper than these established NBA players are.
And you get match rights. Like, for, like, Satoransky, one of my favorite contracts, they get match rights for him. So if it works, that's great. I mean, you do have the additional thing that a lot of those guys are more amenable to leaving the NBA. But we're seeing this with Marcelo Huertas now. I think the Lakers are probably, if he wants to come back, they're probably going to get him at a discount because he has restricted rights. And so you get that because it's not about seniority in basketball. The NBA sees it in NBA terms.
Yeah, Henderson was good. I thought Deron Williams at 1 for 10 is a fantastic value for Dallas. And bad contracts, not going to be too hard to find any, I don't think.
Jamal Crawford, Garrett Temple, I think, are the two big ones for me.
Yeah, Temple is right up there, probably among the top five worst of the offseason, both because they're bringing him in instead of a normal point guard at that price. Like, that price for Brandon Jennings, actually, to me, I mean, maybe Jennings felt like, all right, he wanted 1 year, but all right, so then maybe they could do 2 years, 16, with a second-year player option for Jennings to bring him back in instead of someone like Temple. Yeah, their defense could be better. I think that was a big priority for them, but man, I mean, that second-unit offense, whenever Cousins is out of the game, they are going to just have no chance to score. I think it could get pretty ugly, but I think they could have a good defense for the first time in a long time in Sacramento with the coaching change and some of the guys that they brought in. Some other bad ones, you mentioned Crawford, but he, again, had the Clippers over a barrel, but they're also, you know, he's 36. I mean, and the idea that he's ageless, he won sixth man, he did drop off significantly last year from where he was the year before, and he's done a great job of keeping himself in shape, but he's going to continue to decline. And he, I mean, it's hard to believe that he's going to even be a rotation guy by the end of this contract. And then...
Oh, Lance Thomas is another good one that we have to mention.
Yeah, that one is good. Aldridge is good. There have been some pretty decent bargains here for guys, and this is why I was so critical of some of those contracts that went early, because, yeah, those guys have this sort of veneer of being established starters or having been rotation guys or whatever. You know, someone like Mozgov, for example, versus Aldridge is the perfect comparison when you compare what those two guys got. To me, and if you just look at what their stats are, and, you know, advanced stats too, and Aldridge played better than Mozgov last year. You know, this is not like, it's not even like, I think both from the stats and eye tests, and certainly Aldridge played better than Mozgov in the playoffs. So there's just this idea that, oh, he's an established starter, he's a name, now we're going to pay him. Whereas you can get guys who, even if they may not be exactly as good as some of the guys who got big-time starter-level money over 4 years, $15 million or more, you can still get very close to that production. Like, there isn't, like, some enormous difference between some of these guys who are getting 2-3 years, $10 million a year, $8 million a year, versus the guys who are getting 4 and 15 in large part. And the Henderson and Turner, although they're not entirely similar players, I actually think Henderson is a better player than Turner for a lot of teams, including the Blazers. Like, that's another example of that.
Do you want to go through the slim pickings that we have left on the market?
Is that about it for the bad contracts?
I think so. There weren't that many in the last couple of days, because what happened is the bad contracts got done early. And that happened last year as well, from what I remember. There weren't that many bad contracts late.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it was kind of different this year than we kind of thought it would be. And I think it's also different because there are a lot of teams. We talked about how much space is left now for all these teams. They are showing some restraint. Some of these teams that have $10 million left, $20 million left, you know, the Phoenixes of the world, for example, where maybe some people would have thought that they didn't. But, you know, I think that a lot of the teams that had the first movers, other than just the absolute 10 best, 15 best guys on the market, the teams who moved early are the ones who are really going to get some of the worst contracts. So let's take a look at kind of what's left in the market. Why don't we just say, like, what some of the guys that we think would be the best are?
Okay, so in terms of guys that I think could be a reliable part of the rotation, so I'm going to define it as only that group. At point guard, all you have left, Grievous Vasquez, Langston Galloway, who is now unrestricted, Mario Chalmers, Raymond Felton. That's it.
Yeah, maybe you could say Ty Lawson as well. You could put in there potentially. I don't know about reliable. It's definitely, yeah. But yeah, for certainty, yes. I mean, there are some guys who have upside, I think. But yeah, and then on the restricted market, Galloway is actually no longer restricted. He, I think, is definitely the best guy of any of the sort of 1-2 type combo guards, even though he's not going to necessarily handle the ball. Wade, obviously, is still out there. LeBron, we haven't heard anything about him re-signing, but Rich Paul, it was reported, has rebuffed offers from other teams that might be interested in him. J.R. Smith is still unsigned as well, so is Manu, Lance Stevenson, Derek Williams among the wings, and then you get down into the ones that I had kind of characterized as fringe, Brandon Rush, Joe Green, Wayne Ellington. He might actually be a decent option for the Warriors as a backup, too, if he's willing to take the minimum as a way to kind of rehab his value a little bit. Richard Jefferson's still out there, but yeah, nothing too incredibly sexy there. And then the bigs, there's still and then on the restricted wings, there's still some good guys there.
Yeah, Alan Crabb, Maurice Harkless, and Dion Waiters. So while all the key rotation point guards or guards have gotten offers, these guys have not yet, and so that will be a notable market, especially with the rumors about Crabb in the next couple days. Like, I think that's going to be the story of July 6th, is going to be those guys.
Among bigs, Nene is still out there. Mo Spates, David Lee, those are probably the only guys
that's
I look
the
at. Well, yeah, just talking about unrestricted.
He's right. Unrestricted.
You are correct about that. Yeah, I forgot. I forgot to move him over into my unrestricted table on my sheet. Yeah, he's up there. I still think that a team that wouldn't absolutely be relying on him should make him a pretty good offer, because he has some upside with his, yeah, his injuries. He could really collapse, but I think I might even consider, you know, a pretty big offer for him with maybe like a non-guarantee to see what you can get out of him. And then they've still got Kevin Serafin among the unrestricteds as well. I think he at least provides some rim protection. He's like a semi-adequate backup center for a team that doesn't have a lot of flexibility. We'll see what he's looking for. Jason Smith, if he could somehow repeat his shooting from last year, which he probably won't, would be good. And then, you know, Quincy Acey's another guy I kind of like. He actually started for Sacramento for part of the year.
Brandon Bass, I think, could be a nice piece for somebody.
Yeah, I think that's a good one, too. JaVale McGee will probably be a free agent, but you know, he could barely stay on the court for the Mavericks last year.
Would you claim him? Like, if it, because it's a 1 year deal, would you consider that if you were one of the other teams?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe. I mean, even, not the Wizards. He couldn't get on the floor even for the Mavericks, but yeah, not the Wizards. And then, so probably the greatest intrigue, other than you mentioned Crabbe, Harkless, and Waiters, is the restricted guys, Myers Leonard, Demo, Boban. Actually, we haven't officially heard, but he's probably actually going to be unrestricted now as a big. He should get a reasonable offer. Miles Plumlee as well, Jared Sollinger, Tyler Zeller. Those are all solid rotation guys. And Terrence Jones actually also has an unrestricted big as someone that we might consider. I forgot to move him over to my unrestricted column as well. And I think that will just about do it for this episode. Don't forget about our sponsors, the Naked 3D Fitness Tracker, the world's first home body scanner. That's naked.fit, FIT/capspace is the URL. For them, let them know that you came from us. A lot of listeners actually have been reserving theirs right now, so that's it's really a cool product, and I'm glad that you guys have agreed and have been purchasing that. And then also Betterment lower cost automated investing. That's betterment.com/capspace as well. Again, that same URL. Let them know that you came from us. Danny, do you have anything to plug before we depart?
I do. I wrote a piece for the Sporting News kind of following up on everything with Kevin Durant about the cap machinations that are required to do it. And a lot of it is now already done because of the moves that are made. But talked about something we discussed a little bit on the podcast today and a little bit yesterday about Brandon Rush and James Michael McAdoo. And, you know, and now we're seeing the quality of guys that they're getting with their minimum contracts. So we'll see.
Yeah, that is pretty remarkable. And also just some great quotes in that locker room now, too. Zaza, D-West, although he can be some kind of curmudgeonly at times, too. But it's going to be an interesting team to cover. We'll put it that way. All right, that'll do it for today. Not sure on the schedule going forward here. Going to be in Vegas doing the sports business classroom with Larry Kuhn, watching some games. We'll probably wait a couple of days, let some more signings shake out. And obviously, if there's some enormous news, we'll record. But we'll let these podcasts marinate for a couple of days. Probably be back, you know, around the end of the week, maybe as we start getting some of these restricted offers in. And then obviously, once Summer League is over, we'll have reports on how all the young guys were doing this summer. And kind of let you know maybe a little bit more what to expect from them going forward as they these young guys get into the NBA. So thanks again for listening. Let your friends know about us, please. We appreciate everyone who has done that. iTunes review or rating also appreciated as well. Talk to y'all next time.